Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Under the Hoodies. This is Bill Kegel. I am not joined by anyone quite yet. My guest today will be Randy Zelia. He'll be in about 10-15 minutes or so. And we're basically just going to converse about the NBA until we get tired of conversing about the NBA over the course of the show. But first thing I sort of wanted to get into, I actually think they're really interesting, probably the most interesting team in the NBA right now, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Oklahoma City Thunder. All right. Just kind of do a quick oral history of what I know of the Oklahoma City Thunder. They used to be the Seattle Supersonics, who I was a huge fan of as a kid. I loved Gary Payton. I loved Sean Kemp, Detlef Schrempf, all those guys. Really big fan of that team. And then it was, you know, they sort of reached their pinnacle in 1996 when they went against the Bulls. That was a real fun series. I mean, they weren't ready to go against the Bulls. And I mean, they're a team that could have won the championship had Michael Jordan not been born. You'd probably add them. He had Gary Payton to the list of great NBA players that should have won a title in their prime but didn't because Michael Jordan was born. You know, throw him in with, Barkley and John Stockton and Karl Malone, those guys. But anyway, digressing a little bit. In 2007, the Oklahoma City Thunder, they hired a extremely young 31-year-old, which is insane to be a general manager of a major sports team, Sam Presti from the San Antonio Spurs. Now, Sam Presti, what he did, obviously, is he drafted Kevin Durant, drafted Russell Westbrook, which I heard an interesting story about. A while back on, I think it was a Zach Lowe story, they were going back and forth on whether or not they were going to draft Russell Westbrook or Brooke Lopez. And clearly they made the right decision because, you know, Russell Westbrook is insane and possibly the greatest athlete that's ever lived that's played the NBA. And just what he's been doing since Durant's been hurt, with the triple-doubles, I mean, that's all been well-documented. It's just insane to watch him operate. Had a kind of a rough game last night against the Grizzlies. I watched probably about 75% of that game and just wasn't feeling it shooting the ball. I turned the ball over, some silly turnovers early on. Russell Westbrook, you know, to digress a little bit from my Oklahoma City Thunder tangent, Russell Westbrook, kind of an underrated overall point guard, like a setup point guard. I mean, he's never going to be on the level of Chris Paul, you know, as far as setting guys up or whatever. But I honestly think guys like playing with him a little more because he takes a lot of pressure off the guys that aren't quite, you know, on his level. And it's just sort of interesting to watch him, like, sort of operate because he's such a force offensively. And he sort of opens up a lot of stuff for everybody else around him. I know he did lead the league in assists to player. I think he's first and third in that over the last couple of years. I think he was first in assist to Kevin Durant and third in assist to Serge Ibaka. And what I mean by that is, you know, kind of player-to-player assist-to-points ratio. I believe over that same span, I think Chris Paul was second with assist to Blake Griffin. Anyway, so Russell Westbrook, it's kind of a ballsy move drafting Russell Westbrook fourth overall because he was considered a raw sort of a project guy coming out of college. I mean, he was, you know, he had a position but didn't have a position. He was kind of like, you know, is he a shooting guard? Is he a, you know, is he a point guard? You know, what is he? And I think what we kind of learned that is he is just a guard, and you kind of have to let him be what he is. He is a... It's how I would describe, like, when really good players coming out of high school are being scouted and they are, you know, labeled as athlete. That's kind of how I describe Russell Westbrook as a player, as an NBA player. He's just sort of a playmaker. I mean, he brings the ball up. He'll either sprint down. He'll go 1-on-5. And he'll, you know, go in for a layup, or he'll set another kind of a trail guy up for a nice play. Like last night against the Grizzlies, he sort of forced his way into the paint a little bit, backed out, and then caught a nice threw a nice pass into a cutting and his cancer, which was really, really interesting. Really, really kind of fun to watch because it's funny how much the defense was sort of kind of collapsed on him a little bit. But anyway, I digress a little bit from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Another pick that they made, the Serge Ibaka pick. Serge Ibaka, relative unknown from the Congo, really was, I mean, out of all the guys that they drafted, and they've done, obviously did a great job drafting players. I mean, that's been well documented, but Serge Ibaka is sort of an unknown from Congo, and he was an insane developmental project. Just kind of, you know, raw as raw could be as a 18-year-old, you know, coming from a different continent, a really poor continent, and just how they sort of integrated him into the community, you know, helped them, you know, sort of assimilate and, you know, sort of develop him as a basketball player. I mean, he's, you know, he shoots a high percentage, and he's obviously not known for his offense, but isn't terrible offensively at all. I mean, he led the league in shot blocking every year since 2010. I mean, that's 2010 as a, I believe he's a 20-year-old, you know, sort of an unpolished player, but he just does one thing really well. He has talent, and that's rim protection. And that is a definite component to any championship team is having a rim protector. And it doesn't get much better as a rim protector than Serge Ibaka. So that was kind of an incredible pick that worked out for him. He was picked 24th overall. And then the next year they go and draft James Harden. And I think as much as Westbrook, I don't think they realized what they had in James Harden. Oh, we got Randy on now, so I'm bringing him on. Mr. Zelia, how are you?
Good, Mr. McEagle. Yes, pleasure to be here. I came on a little early because, you know, I'm a working man on Saturdays, so even though I constantly work, I'm always working, but figured I'd call, give you a few minutes early, and listen, you may not know this. I shot you a message. But, you know, you're usually on Wednesdays. You'll be talking a little football this week. I think, you know, look at your cell phone. You'll get that message. But
I have a football guest for Wednesday. Great. Should we say who it is, or should I just wait till after the show?
Not yet. We'll start the advertising for it on Monday. But
all right, great.
So let's jump into it, my friend. Let's jump into it. What do you got for me?
All right. I was sort of going over. I was doing a quick oral history of the Oklahoma City Thunder. And what I was going to do is basically I was going to lead into where I think they're going to go next season and even beyond next season, because it came out recently that Kevin Durant said that his wish as an NBA player is to stay with the same team for his entire career, sort of not necessarily putting to rest the, you know, him going back home to D.C., which I think that's just that came out of, in my opinion, nowhere other than like LeBron going back to Cleveland. But I don't think I've ever heard anyone in his camp or anyone say that. But they're kind of an interesting franchise because they drafted so well, then they traded James Harden. James Harden became, you know, one of the five best players in the league. And at one point, having three of the five best players in the league on your team, obviously they didn't know it yet with Harden, along with Ibaka. That team should be, you know, heading towards title number two or three right now. And unfortunately, they're just in this disarray of injuries. So I was just curious to get, you know, once I found out you were coming on, sort of to get your take on what they were, where do you think they end up? Where do you think this team's legacy ends, and when does it end?
Well, here's the thing. When they went to the finals against the Miami Heat a couple seasons ago, their inexperience to closing out the big game was there. Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant were two guys in the NBA Finals, but I think maybe they were 24, or maybe even a little younger at that point in time. So, and, you know, you were looking at LeBron James, who was 28, 29, 30 years old. Dwayne Wade in his, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Chris Bosh, same thing. Guys who have been around the corner. So it's one of those things where they were not ready for that big stage. You know, they won that big game. They probably should have won game two.
Right.
And they could have, you know, it could have been just as easy if the ball bounced a different way. They could have swept Miami that year. But it did.
Right.
If you look on how they draft and how well they did, that team was made for, you know, for around this time. The James Harden situation, when you traded Harden away, you had to look at something, and you had to look at what does James Harden bring to the table and what does Serge Ibaka bring to the table. And they looked at it at the time of James Harden is a guy who can score in bunches, which there's a lot of guys in the NBA who can do that. Look, they traded Reggie Jackson, and Reggie Jackson's doing in Detroit. Now, look what he's doing. So, you know, there's a lot of guys in the league who can do those things. But there's things that Ibaka can do on the court that are not out there. A lot of the defensive, you know, intangibles, a lot of the blocking shots, rebounding. He's now adding, you know, more offense to his game when he's been healthy. Now you have the Durant situation where he's hurt. I've always felt that Durant is the type of guy where he does want to stay with one team. We're now going to go into that point with the collective bargaining agreement going again in a few years where, you know, the NBA, if it was up to the NBA, and I know this from different sources who told me this, that the NBA would love to adopt the NFL cap, where it's a hard cap, you have this much money per year, and by this date you have to be under or you're going to get hit hard. And they also want to have it where, like a situation like Paul George, where Paul George gets hurt, the Pacers want to cut him, they can cut him. That's where the league and the owners want to get to. Obviously, the players' union in the NBA is a lot more together. Michelle Roberts and I spoke briefly the other day, and they're very happy with the current system. Obviously, they would have liked it where around the same time when LeBron, Bosh, and Wade all joined together, so they can have a lot of money to free. But now the way with the new TV contracts that are coming up, the salary cap either next year or the year after is going to go up into the 80s.
Yeah, so that's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Crazy. No, that's going to be a little crazy.
And it is, and I don't see the NBA ever adopting that, the players' union ever adopting the hard cap like the NFL has, because you can just sort of see what the NFL is doing with it. I think that with the lack of guaranteed, I mean, that's the beauty of playing in the NBA, and as of, I think right now, I think the highest paid average professional athlete in America is NBA players.
I agree with that.
Per player, obviously. I think baseball.
Baseball.
I think. Yeah, they have the ability to pay an individual player more, but I think on average the NBA players make more. If I have to look that up, and I'll add that to my additions or my subtractions and or whatever retractions. Corrections and retractions. Good Lord, Randy. I need to go to bed. I'm tired. But yeah, I think the NFL, I mean, there's definitely enough of a sample size to sort of list all the reasons why the NBA Players Association wouldn't want to go to that hard cap. I mean, and isn't the reason, am I remembering this correctly, isn't the reason that they traded James Harden, weren't they a couple $1 million a year apart, and Oklahoma City didn't want to go over the luxury tax?
Yeah, that was part of it too. And again, they had to make a decision between Ibaka and Harden. And at the end of the day, who are you giving the money to? Well, you can save a couple million by giving it to Ibaka, and he does a little bit more than Harden does. Now, don't get me wrong. We also have to look at one very important factor too. James Harden with the Oklahoma City Thunder was playing 20 to 20. You know, was only playing 25 to 30 minutes per game. James Harden with the Houston Rockets is playing 35 to 42 minutes a game and is their number one option. When he was playing with OKC, he was on the floor with Westbrook and Durant. He was the third option. So there's a different mentality. There's a different mentality, which a lot of people are just like, oh, I can't believe Oklahoma City came away. Well, no, his role was different. If you're a guy who can score the ball and score points in punches, like just like Reggie Jackson, like I'm saying, he had a limited role in OKC, and now he's given the freedom to do what he wants to do and run plays with Stan Van Gundy, yeah, you're going to score more points. Look, you know, Thaddeus Young is a guy who's sitting on Minnesota's bench. He's playing excellent for Brooklyn right now. So, it's different. Like, I think within a couple of years, you know, if as long as he keeps working and he can develop a jump shot, Zach LaVine from the Minnesota Timberwolves, 19 years old, he can hang in the league for a little while longer. He might be able to become a household name in the NBA, not just for dunking. So it's really interesting to see how things are you know, the roles can change going from a team. Look, I always thought that Travis Outlaw, if you remember Travis Outlaw in the NBA, Travis was a guy where you put him on the court, just don't run any plays for him. Let him be a guy who just flashes, cuts the open spots, rebound the ball, and boot putbacks. That's how he was in Portland, and he was very successful. Then, you know, started going to teams where it was a system, and started going to places where I started running different types of plays for him. It wasn't that type of player. So it's a matter of the system, the way you play, and how things are working for individual players.
I agree with all that. And yeah, I sort of touched on it. I don't think Oklahoma City sort of realized how high his ceiling was. I think they appreciated that it was higher than what it was, when he was on the team, which is why he was actually willing to take, less than the max to stay there. Maybe he didn't even know what his ceiling was, because what he's doing with Houston, for one, they're as of right now, they're the 2 seed, which, could change tonight. But they're 2 seed in the West, the very, very difficult, insanely hard, competitive West. And they're a 2 seed without Dwight Howard for most of the year, and really not much of an option, outside of Harden, especially with not having Chandler Parsons or that other scorer this year. Although I did love the KJ McDaniels trade. I thought that was great, and I think he's going to have at least one big moment in the playoffs. I think that guy is just insanely talented, but doesn't know how to play NBA basketball yet.
Well, here's the reality with the Houston Rockets. I think if there's any team in the top four that can be knocked out in round one, I think it's Houston.
I
tend to differ. When Wesley Matthews went down, everyone's like, "Oh, Portland's going to be in trouble." They're so lucky they traded for Aaron Afalo when they did, because Aaron has been able to step right in there and pick up the scoring slack that Wesley Matthews had. Now, they're still a little short on their bench, but here's why I don't think Houston's going to make it to round two. You're supposed to beat the Lakers, the Timberwolves, the lesser teams in your conference.
Right.
You're going to beat those, it's a long season. The NBA season is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you're going to beat up on those bad teams in the Eastern Conference, like the Knicks, the Celtics. Those teams, from the 7th seed down in the Eastern Conference, the Western Conference usually pick them apart. The Houston Rockets benefited from their schedule. When it comes down to it, Dwight Howard's not going to give you 25 points a night. James Harden is, like you said, is the main offensive option. And they do have some nice complementary players. But you're asking those guys to step up for a 7-game series. Heck, this is the reason why I don't think the Golden State Warriors are going to make it to the NBA Finals. Golden State is a team that loves fast break basketball. They play great defense, but they live on fast break basketball and are a jump shooting team. When it comes to half court offense, it's hard for them to get those same type of jump shots off, and you're relying a lot on Andrew Bogut and David Lee.
Right.
Again, seven game series against the same team. I know you didn't ask this question, but I'm going to answer a question you didn't ask. I think the NBA Finals this year is going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Memphis Grizzlies.
Hey, you and I have the same pick. Have the same pick. That's what I've been saying since January.
I think it's Memphis or San Antonio. Memphis or San Antonio in the West.
Ooh, it is a stands right now. They're playing each other in the first round, so that's going to be a great series if it is Memphis and San Antonio in the first round. Because, I think you're right. I think the winner of that series is going to represent the Western Conference in the finals against the Cavs. Because
change. No, I'm sorry. That's going to change. Because San Antonio, I think, is a game. It's either a game or 2 games behind the 4 spot. And they can just as easily make up that. I think they're playing Portland one or two more times. So if that happens, San Antonio might avoid Golden State and Memphis to go round two, which would be a huge thing. I think They'll end up with Portland or the Clippers in round one, which, I again, when it comes to the Clippers, it's Jekyll and Hyde. Even when everybody's full healthy, I don't think the Clippers are they may be a second round team at best, because they have no wing offense. I like J.J. Redick. But Redick to me is still a guy that comes off the bench for 25 minutes a night. Matt Barnes is a nice complimentary piece, again, that's supposed to come off the bench. So
no offense, though. You're playing 4 or 5 on the offense bench with Matt Barnes in your lineup.
Yeah. And so, to me, I just don't see the Clippers doing anything in the second half of a season. You know, for a seven-game playoff series.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. What I like about Memphis is their ability to they sort of can control the clock. They're like that team in the NFL that can run the ball. They basically dictate the pace of the game, and I love that about them. They're not gonna if you watched the Oklahoma City game last night. Russell Westbrook was grabbing rebounds and the team was flying down the court. And then, you know, when there was a change of possession, you saw Mike Conley just, you know, dribbling up court, running their half-court set, you know, making cuts, you're making smart passes. They're not going to change their game for anybody. And I think, like you were pointing out, in seven-game series where you're playing the same team, for one, they're going to wear teams down. They're basically just going to let them punch themselves out, and then that's when they're just going to keep running the same thing they've done. I think that's why that kind of team – I think that's why, you know, the Spurs have been successful. I mean, that along with their insane depth, and not running their players into the ground throughout the regular season, and as much criticism as, you know, DNP rest gets. The Spurs won the title last year just based on that, and probably shouldn't have won it the year before, you know, based on the same thing. LeBron James, who is superhuman, was cramped and gassed in game one of the finals last year, and San Antonio was playing, they were playing in the same condition, and they were nowhere near the kind of tired that Miami was.
Well, here's the other thing, too, and this is the one thing that we probably haven't talked about, and we're probably not really going to bring it up. Memphis improved themselves by adding to their weakness. I felt that with Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, they were missing jump shooters. I didn't think that they had the perimeter touch. Mike Conley is a decent shooter, but they didn't really have it. Last year, they had Mike Miller, but you wanted a little bit more. This year, say what you want about Vince Carter. Vince Carter gives you a nice scoring punch off the bench. But they added Jeff Green when they traded Tayshaun Prince. And they're having, you know, Courtney Lee, who can give you some slashing to the basket. They've added enough pieces offensively to make up a poor shooter. They're not the great three-point shooting team still, but they have enough balance where they can kick you in the paint and kick you out of the paint. So they're right there. And there's one team that you have not even brought up in the West yet. They seem to be forgotten, but they're very much. I consider them, the method they use to build their team is like the Yankees, and that's Dallas. Dallas is still a very, very scary team when you have Rajon Rondo, Dirk Nowitzki, Monta Ellis, Tyson Chandler, Richard Jefferson, who's been playing well, Chandler Parsons. That's a very scary team as long as they're on the same page. And you have a coach like Rick Carlisle, and don't forget they also have Amari Stoudemire coming off the bench too. You have a team of veterans. I know they're trying to pull it together right now, but they're not your normal 7 seed. This is a 7 seed that might win 50 games this year. So, you know, that's a scary thought to think about. You know, their possibility of winning 50 games, or, you know, or just fall a little bit short, they can knock out Memphis or Houston in the first round. So, it's really, because there's no Kevin Durant, Oklahoma City is the only team that I can't see getting past the second round. That's really in the West.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think Dallas is sort of playing playoff basketball right now. Maybe not playoff level basketball, but I think a lot of people are sleeping on it because of Rondo and Carlisle not getting along or whatever. Rondo being suspended for the game for whatever happened about a month ago with them on the court and Rondo not running the plays, Carlisle was calling or whatever. Yeah, and they're basically feeling each other out. It's like, you know, when you have a teenager and they're trying to figure out what they can get away with. That's what Rondo was doing with the coaching staff. That's what I assume. And the thing that, you know, Let's not forget that Rondo is one of the best playoff players in the NBA. He is insane in the playoffs. And I think come playoff time, I think that Rajon Rondo is going to show up. He's going to do a better job getting in the paint. He's going to do a better job getting to the line, which is what he doesn't do. I mean, he's not a good free throw shooter by any stretch, but if he's getting in the paint, he's going to draw defenses. And is there a better passer, you know, through traffic than Rajon Rondo in the NBA? I mean, other than LeBron, I don't think so. So I agree with you. I actually like that team. I like their shooters are really good. Obviously, Dirk Nowitzki, Chandler Parsons. Chandler Parsons doesn't get enough credit, by the way, for being a more all-around player. He gets kind of labeled a jump shooter, which I actually think he's just an overall really good, not many flaws in his game player. And Monte Ellis for the last two seasons has led the league in, you know, I think he's like maybe second or third, but drives to the basket and points on drives to the basket. I think James Harden is just sort of dominating that category this year. But last two seasons, Monte Ellis has sort of dominated that. So they're good at getting out and running, and they're also good at setting up half-court sets. And I love Rajon Rondo on any playoff team. I think he just adds an insane amount of value to any team. And I think that, like you pointed out, Rick Carlisle, great coach, one of the three or four best coaches in the NBA. So you're right. It would not surprise me to see Dallas get out of the first round against whoever the two seed may end up being, especially if it's Houston. I really think they match up favorably with Houston.
Well, not only that, too, but it's funny, too. We haven't even touched on the Eastern Conference, but if you look at the West, the first top seven seeds, all of them can make the Western Conference Finals, and all of them can probably really take off on some of the things from the East. I only have a minute or two left here. So let's really quickly take a look at the East. Well, the race for eighth is pretty sad, I'm not going to lie. You have a bunch of teams left. Right now, I think the couple underlying stories that we're not talking about in the East, Brooklyn has won six in a row. They're playing Atlanta tonight. They can win, and they're a game and a half behind in the sixth spot. This team is coming together now, which is a little scary.
Yeah.
If they end up in the sixth spot and they end up playing the Toronto Raptors, I can't see why Brooklyn can't make the second round. Now, if they play Chicago, I think if they play Chicago, then it's a moot point. I think it's, let's just put Brooklyn out of their misery already. But if they end up with Toronto, look, Toronto, I feel that the NBA community gives Toronto so much love. But I don't see it. I just don't see it. They're not. They have Kyle Lowry's a good point guard. DeMar DeRozan is a. If there's a level below superstar, that's where DeMar DeRozan is.
Yeah.
I think if he was on another team, he's a second option. But he's a first
he's
option.
He's not a. No. I know what you're saying. Go on. Sorry.
Yeah. He's like a second option. So. I'm not buying into Toronto. I'm not even sure I'm buying into Atlanta yet. And the reason why I'm not really buying into Atlanta is because, like we were saying before about Golden State, I think the difference is Atlanta's a little more balanced than Golden State is. I'm not buying into Atlanta because, again, you're playing a lot of teams. Remember, because when you're in the East, you only play the Western Conference teams twice. You play the Eastern teams three to four times. There was a lot of bad basketball going on when they had that really, really, really long winning streak.
Yep.
So, like Cleveland really didn't find their groove yet. Chicago was, at the time, Rose was in and out of the lineup. That team was going through a lot of injuries. So they took an 11-game lead in the conference so early that the other teams haven't been able to catch up.
Right.
Like, Cleveland has caught up. And I think it's played the best basketball since the beginning of January. And I just can't see Atlanta beating Cleveland. Now, there's only one other team that I think can make it to the NBA Finals from the East besides Atlanta and Cleveland and Chicago. As long as Rose comes back and as long as Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson and everybody's healthy and they go back to playing gritty-style basketball. They haven't been doing that. They didn't do that the first part of the year. They've been doing it more lately with all the injuries. But they have to be able to put it in both ends of the court all the time and be gritty.
I think Jimmy Butler coming back and being 100% might be the most important of those three names you mentioned. And I realize I might be in the minority on that, but I think Derrick Rose is just a jump shooter, sort of everybody's waiting for to get hurt again at this point. And until he proves he can stay healthy for an entire season, I unfortunately think that's going to be his, you know, where he lands. All right, real quick before you go, Randy, if you have a second, what teams in the West do you think would give Cleveland the most guff, you know, if they make it to the finals? Like, what teams do you think Cleveland cannot beat in the West or would have the hardest time with?
I think they'd have a really difficult time with San Antonio.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
I think Popovich is sort of figuring LeBron out. So I think that they played some really, really good competitive regular season games with each other. I think the other team would be Memphis. The two teams that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
A part of me also wants to say the Rockets, because I watched them play without Kyrie.
Yeah.
On national TV, and they struggled a little bit. I want to say Houston just because I don't think J.R. Smith defensively can really do a lot on Harden, and you're gonna have to do a lot of mismatching. Otherwise, I say Memphis and San Antonio with Houston as a runner up, but I watched Cleveland dominate the Warriors, and I watched
right.
a couple other teams. You know, Dallas didn't do much against them. You know, I'm not buying the Clippers. You know, Doc needs some like a talent transplant, and I'm not really buying into Portland either. So, you know, I would say San Antonio and Memphis can give Cleveland a really hard 7-game series.
Yeah, I think the Houston thing is a good point too, because I think LeBron would end up guarding Harden for about 50% of the time, and that's a huge burden for him to carry on defense when he's going to be carrying a large part of the burden on offense. I mean, I think that's what you sort of saw in the San Antonio series last year, is when if you watch LeBron, he did a great job guarding Tony Parker, which set up Kawhi Leonard, and then he had to go back to defending Kawhi Leonard. Like, and he just, I think that's where he sort of like just physically was losing it a little bit.
Well, what also with that too is, you know, keep in mind, I say that because I watched that Houston-Cleveland game that was on ABC. But the one thing that was very important, there was no Kyrie Irving. So Kyrie Irving, and you know, that's the difference between LeBron's first stint and the second stint in Cleveland. You know, you can say what you want about Kevin Love. I think the media is blowing that out of more out of proportion.
100%. Yeah, couldn't agree with you more.
I think having Kyrie go out there and say, okay, I'm going to take Harden. And there's one thing we also forgot about with the Houston Rockets, which goes back to the scheduling about some of the level of teams that you're playing. A key part of the Houston offense and a key part of the team is with Patrick Beverley. He's out for the year.
Yeah, that's the toughness. That's sort of like like Portland losing Wes Matthews. That's sort of their identity guy. God, if Patrick Beverley had someone else is still like somebody more talented than him with his brain, it'd be the best point guard in the league. Love Patrick Beverley.
And so if we got to that point, I'm like, oh God, you know, how much trouble would the rest of the league be if Patrick Beverley was healthy? But you know, that's why I just look at Houston. I'm saying, you know what? Okay, Dallas can beat Houston in the first round of the 7-game series. So that's, you know, if the Clippers fall to 7, oh God, the Clippers can beat Rockets in the 7. I think every one of those other seven teams can beat Houston in the first round of the playoffs. I don't think OKC can, not without Durant. So, and I'll be honest with you, if I were the Oklahoma City Thunder, I wouldn't want to make the playoffs this year. I would want to just, you know, be excited that Westbrook played, get Durant back next year, get a draft pick, because I would have loved to see the Pelicans just get in this year, because they too have so much talent. So,
God, if Thibodeau goes there, I swear to God, they're in the final super year. If that's what happens,
I agree with
Thibodeau. I love Thibodeau on the Pelicans. Just imagine what he could do with Anthony Davis defensively. A guy that gets blocks and steals, I would love that.
Yeah, well, we'll see what's going to happen with Tibbs. I'll have more for you next week on that. So, all right, my friend, I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thank you for coming on. It was great, and need more. Need some more NBA talk with you, so I'll be calling you through the week.
No problem, brother.
All right, Randy. Thanks a lot.
You too. Let it run.
Bye. Just a real quick, a few quick house cleaning things. Just make sure you follow me on Twitter at Bill Kegel, Facebook Bill Kegel. Pretty easy. Backswordspages.com. Make sure you listen to some of the other shows. I've been listening to Seth and Sean actually on our network. They're fantastic. That's a real good show. I'm going to try to sort of finagle my way to be a guest on that show. And I apologize for me rambling on sort of aimlessly at the beginning of the show. And right now, I've got a kid on the way, so I'm not really firing at all cylinders right now. So I apologize. That's going to be my excuse for this week. And look out for Wednesday's show. We're going to be promoting it. I don't even know who the guest is yet. Randy got somebody, so I look forward to that. And look forward to having Brian Shipley back on, Mike Pazeski, and getting some good guests. Go back and listen to a couple episodes ago. We had Bill Ingram from Basketball Insiders on. Real good, real good guest. Just keep listening. We'll be on either Saturdays or Wednesdays. That's going to be our schedule. So just look for us, and thanks for listening. Bye.